So thankful I can be with you this morning. Very thankful to be with my family and be with all of you who are such an encouragement to me and Michaela as we work here and worship with you all. Bradley, thank you for those songs and thank you for those words of encouragement. I really appreciate that. That's going to tie in well to the sermon this morning. I'm thankful for all the visitors, especially who are here. We have several who are here, some that I am familiar with. I'm thankful for you being here. One really good friend that's here that has been a huge and great influence in my life, and I appreciate you being here to support me in that. So several months ago, I preached a lesson on Haggai, the book of Haggai. We were in the days of Haggai, and we talked about how they were, Haggai and the other prophet Zechariah were stirring the people up to build the temple, finish the temple, and it took them about 5 years. So we had the return from captivity. We had in 538 BC, it's the first return under Zerubbabel leading them. And then from Haggai and Zechariah's prophecy in 520 BC, about 18 years later, they stirred the people up to build the temple, and it took about 5 years. So we're around 515 BC. So from the temple, all the way about 70 years, around 445 BC, is the third return under Nehemiah, final return that takes place. And we remember the book of Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament. That is around, this is around the time that we're going to be this morning. It's around 445 BC, in the prophecy of Malachi, and the return under Nehemiah. Jason, thank you for reading that passage this morning. When we think about the book of Nehemiah, and we think about the man Nehemiah, what comes to mind? Think about a great leader, one of the best examples of a leader in the Old Testament, and in the Bible, a great example. But this morning, we're not really going to talk about leadership as much as the fruits of good leadership. So we're going to talk about how Nehemiah did such a great job of being a leader and what came from that. So where we're going this morning, we've got 4 points and 4 principles to take from this lesson this morning. That God's work should be done orderly. There's a place for all of us. Your service should fit you, and the work is tied to purpose. So God's work should be done orderly. Some of the high school students are going to be proud of my pictures this morning. I did so good. I spent so much time to make sure I had good images here. So God's work should be done orderly, okay? Sometimes it just starts with one person. Here in Nehemiah, if you're over in Nehemiah, please turn. If you're not there, please turn. And we're going to start in chapter 2 and just highlight a few verses there. And then we're going to go over to chapter 3. Now, don't let chapter 3 scare you, because there's a lot of names there. But it's some really good stuff in there. So sometimes it starts with one person. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 12, when as was read, Nehemiah got up at night and took a few men with him. Okay, so it started with Nehemiah. Nehemiah hears about from his brother that the walls have been destroyed. The walls of Jerusalem has been destroyed. So he's like, I need to do something about this. I need to rebuild the walls. So he can't just do that alone. So he finds a few men to help him. Then look down at verse 16. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, for I had not yet told the Jews, priests, nobles, officials, or the rest of those who would be doing the work. Okay, so there's more people. All right? We think about a business. I work with my dad in the painting business, and he established and began that business from just him. He had to gear his mind on the will to start the work, and then he had a friend help him, and then his friend, who had friends, then came, and now it formed a business. And so he could be able to get more work done. That's how a business works. If you notice, now moving on to chapter 3 of Nehemiah, you've got all these different names and all of these different groups. You've got about 38 different names. about 42 different groups here that are mentioned. It's a lot of people. Over in Exodus chapter 18, you don't have to turn there. I want us to kind of stay in Nehemiah so you can leave your Bible there. But in Exodus chapter 18, we have Moses' father-in-law who visits him, Jethro. And this is what he says to Moses. When Moses' father-in-law saw everything he was doing for them, he asked, "What is this that you're doing for the people? Why are you alone sitting as judge while all the people stand around you from morning until evening?" So Moses is the leader of the Israelites in the Old Testament, from what we remember, all the way from the beginning of Exodus, Deuteronomy. He is their leader. But Jethro says, "What you're doing is not good," in verse 17. Moses' father-in-law said, "You will certainly wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, because the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone." And then skipping down to verse 25, "So Moses chose able men from all Israel and made them leaders over the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens." Okay, so Moses learned this lesson. Moses did this with the help of his father-in-law. Sometimes it might be hard to listen to your father-in-law, but he was wise, and he said wise words to Moses so they could work together. Moses couldn't do this by himself. Yes, he was the leader, but he also needed other friends to help him with this work. So they were divided up in an orderly way. Look at the groups that are mentioned now. This is an interesting point. In chapter 3 of Nehemiah, look at the different groups here. Okay, so if you look at verse 1, you've got priests that are mentioned. In verse 1, you've also got in verse 2, the men of Jericho. In verse 5, you have the Tekoites. And as we're in verse 5, let's remember, beside them the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not lift a finger to help their supervisors. So let's remember that, and we're going to come back to that just in a minute. But okay, so you have in verse 7, men of Gibeon. You have verse 8, goldsmiths and perfumers. And then skipping all the way down to the end of chapter 3 and verse 32, you have the merchants. So, and different, the same names are kind of repeated throughout the rest of the chapter. But the point here is, they're all different trades. And yet, what are they doing? They're doing the same thing. They're doing the same thing. They're doing the same work. And it's also mentioned almost in every single verse in chapter 3 that it says, the son of so-and-so, then it moves on from that work next to, or beside, or after him. So you kind of see this like little chain here that it's like he's working, and then after him, and then after him, and after him. That's an orderly way. And it's also a unifying way, that next to him and after him. It's such a beautiful, beautiful passage here, a beautiful chapter of the unity that these people have, even though they have different jobs. You've got, I bet you this man, this woman, man, and so on, are all figuring out on how to build a certain project, but they're all got different missions, and they're all leading different groups here. I want us to see that. They've all got a different task in an orderly and unifying way. And I want us to also, the second principle is to remember, ties into the first one, that there is a place for all of us. It's done in an orderly way, unifying way, but there's going to be a place for all of us. You see these men right here? I don't really want to be them, but I fear you wouldn't either, but we need them. They need them so they can work in the building that they're building. You see that? Does that not make sense? They need those workers, otherwise they won't have a roof over their head, so they can work. In the same way that these people are working with these fascinating tools that these people have engineered for. You see how that all kind of connects? We all need each other. It's fascinating. So there's a place for all of us. Many different groups of people are mentioned. And as we said, what do they all have in common? They all are working on the same thing, and they all want to work together. And it would be easy to make excuses. Well, you know, I studied to be a doctor, so I don't want to be I don't want to be a part of this construction. I'm not a construction worker. Well, by trade, I'm a HVAC guy, or I'm a painter by trade. I don't want to participate in this building of the wall. I don't know how to do that. None of them made excuses. They all listened to Nehemiah, and they worked together to build this project. So there's unity and strength. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12, says, two can resist, but a cord of three strands is not so easily broken. More people, stronger it is. We've got a quote by Michael Jackson. Well, teamwork makes the dream work. We're familiar with that. Michael Jordan, I'm sorry. Not the same guy. So we got a quote. We have a quote from Michael Jordan here. Talent wins games, and teamwork builds championships. That's right. I believe last year, I hate Alan's not here to hear this, but the Indiana Pacers went really far last year. Am I remembering that correctly? In the NBA Finals?
Yeah.
And they didn't really have anyone like spectacular on their team. Like, not one person, was it? They had some good guys. Well, I mean, you've got LeBron on the Lakers. You've got I'm not a big NBA guy, but you've got these really well-known players on these teams. And yet, the Pacers, I think it was, they hadn't made it to the finals in 25 years. But why were they so good? Because all of them worked together as a team. And they were a good team. It wasn't just one guy that made them great. The same with Michael Jordan on the Bulls. And he had good players around him to pass to. So same thing here. Is the teamwork, that they had a good team to make it as far as they did. So the body works in a synchronized way. We know that from 1 Corinthians 12. And 12, verse 12 through 31, you can kind of read through there, but just a few verses I've highlighted. For just as the body is one and has many parts, and all the parts of that body, though many, are one body, so also is Christ. Verse 14, indeed the body is not one part, but many. So if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Okay. So we have unity and strength, and the body works in a synchronized way. I want to share just a short little story here that I heard from a good friend of mine. This is a good illustration here. And it's talking about Jesus' carpentry shop is kind of what it's been titled. But all the tools in Jesus' carpentry shop are having a meeting together, presided over by the hammer who begins the meeting. Someone said, "Brother Hammer, you have to go because you're too noisy." "Well, if I have to go, Brother Screw has to go because you have to twist him to get him to do anything." "Well, if I have to go, then Brother Plain has to go because of all his works on the surface. He's not a very deep person." "Well, if I have to go, then Brother Ruler has to go because he's always measuring everyone by himself." "Well, if I have to go, then Brother Sandpaper has to go because he is rough and he's always rubbing people the wrong way." Just then, Jesus walked into the building, and he picked up the hammer, he picked up the screw, picked up the plane, he picked up the ruler, and he picked up the sandpaper, and they all worked together to build what he wanted to build. Isn't that a good illustration? I thought that was neat, and I wanted to share that. And another interesting point here before we move from this principle is, if you're back in Nehemiah chapter 3, and you're looking at verse 13 and 14. Okay, we're talking about there's a place for all of us. Look in verse 13 and 14 here. "You've got the inhabitants of Zanoah repaired the valley gate. They rebuilt it, installed its doors, bolts, and bars, and repaired 500 yards of the wall to the refuse gate," or my version says, "the dung gate." So, what is that? The refuse gate. What is the valley gate? Well, that's the trash dump. I wouldn't imagine that would be the prettiest gate, would you? The valley of Ben Hinnom is where they would throw that trash from the city. that's where the sacrifices of the children were made when King Manasseh was there. That's where they would offer their children as sacrifices. It's not a good place. It's a terrible valley. It's full of trash, full of wickedness. And yet, this needed to be done. In verse 14, ruler of the district, he repaired the dung gate, he rebuilt it, and installed its his doors, bolts, and bars. When Ronald Reagan was shot and severely injured, after that, the country still functioned, and the country still did well. If I'm remembering correctly, a lot of people are better about history. But if I'm remembering correctly, the country still did well after he was shot, as he was recovering. They functioned. They thrived. Earlier in March of this year, in Birmingham, England, some of the garbage men went on strike because of their pay was too low. They cut their pay. So they went on strike. They said, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to be picking up trash. And the city's not functioning. The city's having a hard time. Some of us guys might not have a problem with this, but some of the women, you probably don't want to look up some of the details. Because, I mean, I've heard they are discovering that there are rats that are the size of cats now because of all these trash thrown on the streets and nobody picks them up. It's disgusting. It's not a job I wouldn't want. But it needs to be done, doesn't it? I have a little graphic here, a picture. It needs to be done. Here in Athens, if we don't have people that have that job to carry out that work, it's going to smell bad. It's going to be disgusting. But we need people to do that work. We need that. Athens won't function if we don't have trash guys. If we don't have people who are going to be able to do this work. It's an important work. Now, does that mean that they're more important than Ronald Reagan? Well, obviously not. But the point I'm making here is we all have a role and we all have a job. And again, the principle, I go back. Principle here is there's a place for all of us. And thirdly, your service should fit you. And here in chapter 3, so just as the body works in a synchronized way, that also means that every part must work differently for the body to function properly. Let's look just briefly in this text here where some of the people worked. Okay, we mentioned the priests, the goldsmiths, the merchants, the perfumers. So, in verse 1, where do we see the priests working? Where do we see them working? It says the sheep gate. Why would they work at the sheep gate? Why that? Well, they need to have sacrifices, right? That just makes sense. So, for them to be able to do their work properly, they need that sheep gate. So, they're going to work hard to get that thing built the right way. They need that. You look at verse 10, and it was still in chapter 3. You look at verse 10, across from his house. Verse 23, opposite of his house. Verse 29, opposite of his house. And verse 30, next to him and opposite of his room is what mine says. So, of course, they're going to be doing a good job. They need the sacrifices in the sheep gate for these other people who have the wall right beside their house. Well, they don't want it to be destroyed. They're going to be attacked first, or it's just going to look bad. They're going to do it the right way if it's in front of their house. I would. And we also need to remember some of the best work can be done at home. Some of the best work can be done at home. Parents with your children, teaching them. And mentioned a lot of times here in the text that it says the son of so-and-so. The family, the fathers, the mothers taught their children to work hard. I mean, you've got in verse 12 of chapter 3, Now, look at the end there. So you have the ruler of half the district of Jerusalem working. And who has he got with him? Who does he have with him? He has his daughters out there working with him, right? And remember in verse 5 when I told you to hold on to that thought, how the nobles did not lift a finger to help their supervisors? So if I was that noble, and I was just kind of stuck up, it's like, well, I'm going to just let these people do the work. And I see Vera over here just working away, doing a good job. And I'm like, man, I'm not doing anything. I'd be embarrassed to see that, to see a father and his daughters doing really good work and hard work because I'm just sitting here being lazy, a lazy sack of bones. I'm not doing anything. That's what a lesson to learn from just that one verse that he and his daughters worked on the wall together. Just a quick illustration here, a quick point to make. I saw this not too long ago, and according to my dad, Jerry, I think your dad had one at his house. Wasn't that right? A hornet's nest? Yeah, I think that was right, yeah. So they're really cool to look at, but you don't want to mess with them, obviously. But you see the shape, and you see the way that's made, and how, to me, it looks awesome. But the queen is the one that initiates the work. She's the one that says, we got to build a nest. We got to build a home. We need to do this. And then others will follow her. Others are going to follow her in that work. She has a role to lead the other hornets to build that great nest. And you notice also in, make sure I got the verse right. Yeah. In verse 20, the last part of verse 25 and 26, we've got the water gate here built. We've got the water gate mentioned. Well, that's essential, obviously. We need they need the water gate. But in the American Standard Version, Nephilim is what's used here for the workers on the water gate. Now, there are some scholars that believe that here recently, that is the same people referred to, the Gibeonites, referred to back in Joshua chapter 9, verse 21. And if you remember, when the Gibeonites deceived them and Joshua and the leaders into thinking that they were a part of the nation and that they were from a long way away, and he deceived them, so he made a treaty with them. Then Joshua figured out that they were deceived, and he wanted to dispose of them and kill them, but Joshua and the leaders already made a treaty, so he couldn't do that. So he assigned them to be woodcutters and water carriers. So if these are the same people, it makes an excellent point here that Nehemiah assigned the guys back in Joshua over their work from the water gate. That was their job. That was their job here. Well, I think I failed to mention. Yeah, verse 26, and the temple servants living in Ophel made repairs opposite of the water gate toward the east and the tower that juts out. So he assigned them to the work that they were used to. Their service fit them. And we need to remember that our service is to the Lord. Our service is to the Lord always. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10, just as each one has received a gift, use it to serve others as good stewards of the varying and grace of God. Romans chapter 12, verse 6 and 8, according to the grace given to us, we have different gifts. Prophecy, use it according to the proportion of one's faith. If service, use it to service. If teaching, in teaching. If exhorting and exhortation, giving and generosity, leading with diligence, showing mercy with cheerfulness. And one point I want to make that I don't want us to be discouraged about is there's going to be some that will work harder than others. That's going to be the case. In verse 27 of chapter 3 of Nehemiah, remember the Tekoites back in chapter 5, it says, next to them, the Tekoites made repair to another section from a point opposite of the great tower that juts out. So these people built twice as much. They did twice the work. Now, that doesn't mean that they're more important than these other people, obviously, because the wall wouldn't get built if they didn't have everybody to do their job. It just notes that they worked harder than some. doesn't mean that they're better than the rest. They use their gift that they were given to work hard. You know, I can't preach the best lesson. Try and compare myself to someone else. I can't preach the best lesson and better than somebody else that's been gifted that. I can't do that. You've got these fantastic Bible class teachers that do. They're using the gift that God has given them. And song lead. You know, I can't lead it. I'm not trying to lead the psalm perfectly. There are some that's been gifted to lead singing in a well way to help us in that service. So, again, we need to use that as encouragement and not discouragement. And that's, again, what we see here. We don't see anyone discouraged because they work twice as hard. It just makes mention that they used the gift they were given. Each of them had a part. They worked together to do the same work in repairing the wall. And then finally, I want us to think about how the work is tied to purpose. The work is tied to purpose. Who should our work be for? As we mentioned in those last two, the gifts that we were given. Well, this is the most important point. The work is for the Lord. It's for the glory of God. And back in chapter 2 of Nehemiah, you've got verse 17 and 18, and then look at verse 20 as well. If you turn there, you see they're rebuilding the wall. They're rebuilding the wall. And this is for who? Who is this for? So verse 17, they wanted God to be praised. Look at verse 18. This is the work of God. Verse 20, the last verse of chapter 2. It is for God's glory. And what? That they are a part of that work for the glory of God. God's work. And remembering that it's also God's city. This is His work. This is His, first and foremost. In Psalm 87, verse 2, the Lord loves Zion's gates more than all the dwellings of Jacob. I'm going to just quickly turn over to Deuteronomy. I had that marked, and I failed to put that on the slides. I think this is a really good passage here in Deuteronomy. Chapter 12, verse 5, it says, instead, turn to the place the Lord your God chooses from all your tribes to put His name for His dwelling and go there. It's God's city. It says God has His name on it. He's richly blessed us with those gifts. So why don't we use them for His glory? It's to the glory of God. I had these two on here. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. So whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. And then we're very familiar with Colossians chapter 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, do it from the heart as something done for the Lord, not for people. When we do our job, we want to do it well, don't we? In our trade, when we work for our bosses, we want to do it skillfully, well. We want to do it with integrity. And we want to make sure we are dependable. But, again, remember, who is this work for? Who is the work for? And who are we to give the glory to always? And that's God. That's God. You also may see, you can highlight this if you want to in your Bibles, but all through chapter 3 of Nehemiah, you see this word repair or rebuilt. And I counted about 42 times that it was mentioned here of using that word. So what is the point here to make about that? It talks about repairing the wall and repairing this. What happens when you repair something? Well, you are using some new materials to help repair, but it's ultimately an older structure that you are putting back together, adding and fixing that existing piece. So, the material that they needed to build this wall was in the rubble. The material they needed was there already. What did they need? They just needed some excitement to be able to get the work done. They just needed some excitement. When hard times arise, Sometimes we'll call it when I'm in a slump, in our physical or spiritual family, we don't really need new things. We just need the excitement, we need the zeal to work in the old truths, if I'll say that, the truths that God has already given us. In Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16, it talks about using the truth that has been given to us. We need to use that. God has given that to us. So let's work hard to use it. Just be excited about it. We don't need these new things. The people didn't need these new things to rebuild the wall. What they had was already there in the rubble. This was a quote by a German martyr, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and wrote several good books and haven't got a chance to read all of them, but really really powerful man who had who stood for the right thing. And this was towards the end of World War II in the time of the Nazis. And he was ultimately killed for this, but one of the quotes he has is, "The person who loves their dream of community will destroy the community, but the person who loves those around them will create community." You see that? Isn't that a wonderful quote? Who wants to work to build the community that they're in instead of worrying about these other things? That's what happened in the time of Hitler. In the time of him, Hitler was destroying his own community. He wasn't building it up. I think that's a wonderful point to make. So, we need to build the wall. We need to protect ourselves. Kind of sounded like Donald Trump. I don't know why I said that. But we need to build a fortress and fortify ourselves, protect ourselves against the attack, because there's an attack that's coming. There is an attack that's coming. Some of you have already been attacked. Our country has been attacked. And I hope that this lesson has also been encouraging to think about, as our country has been in a very difficult time right now. And that's when the devil's going to strike. It's when he's going to strike is when we're down. When we are a family unified here, growing as a church, growing as family. And that's when the devil's going to strike, is when we're doing well. So we need to be on guard. We need to protect our family. Focus, when Michaela and I buy, when we buy our house, we move in and we're married, I'm focusing on that home, our home, and not these others. I need to protect ourselves. Now, we need to reach out to others, but the enemy I'm talking about is Satan. And he's gonna try and attack us any way he can. So what's important is to build a fortified wall, protect our community, and protect our family. That's what's important. So our purpose, talked about, God's work should be done orderly. There's a place for all of us. Your service should fit you, and the work is tied to purpose. What happens at the end here? Well, during the construction, in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 14, says, "After I made an inspection, I stood up and said to the nobles and the officials, the rest of the people, the opposition came, and the enemies were pressing on. Don't be afraid," Nehemiah said. "Remember the great and awe-inspiring Lord and fight for your countrymen, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes." Then the wall was built. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15 and 16, the wall was completed in 52 days. 52 days! On the 25th day of the month, Elul, when all enemies heard this, all the surrounding nations were intimidated and lost their confidence, for they realized that this task had been accomplished by our God. The task had been accomplished by who? Gives God the glory. Hope we can be encouraged by this lesson and be unified in love, as we see in this rich chapter here of Nehemiah, the fruit of leadership, of good leadership. Are we prepared for the attack that's coming? Are we protecting ourselves? And are we going to get to work and continue in the work we already have and give God glory ultimately? Please come as we stand and sing if you have.